"Give way!"
cried Ahab to the oarsmen, and the boats darted forward to the attack. But maddened by yesterday's fresh irons that corroded in him, Moby Dick seemed combinedly possessed by all the angels that fell from heaven. The wide tiers of welded tendons overspreading his broad white forehead, beneath the transparent skin, looked knitted together as head-on he came churning his tail among the boats, and once more flailed them apart, spilling out the irons and lances from the two mates' boats, and dashing in one side of the upper part of their bows, but leaving Ahab's almost without a scar. While Dagoo and Queequeg were stopping the strained planks, and as the whale, swimming out from them, turned and showed one entire flank as he shot by them again, at that moment a quick cry went up. Lashed round and round the fish's back, pinioned in the turns upon turns in which, during the past night, the whale had reeled the involutions of the lines around him, the half-torn body of the Parsee was seen, his sable raiment frayed to shreds, his distended eyes turned full upon old Ahab. The harpoon dropped from his hand. "Befooled, befooled," drawing in a long, lean breath. "Aye, Parsee, I see thee again. Aye, and thou goest before. Away, mates, to the ship. Those boots are useless now. Repair them if you can in time and return to me. If not, Ahab is enough to die. Down, men. The first thing that but offers to jump from this boat I stand in. That thing I harpoon. Ye are not other men, but my arms and my legs. And so obey me." "Where's the whale? Gone down again?" But he looked too nigh the boat, for, as if bent upon escaping with the corpse he bore, and as if the particular place of the last encounter had been but a stage in his leeward voyage, Moby Dick was now again steadily swimming forward, and had almost passed the ship, which thus far had been sailing in the contrary direction to him, though for the present her headway had been stopped. He seemed swimming with his utmost velocity, and now only intent upon pursuing his own straight path in the sea. Setting sail to the rising wind, the lonely boat was swiftly impelled to leeward by both oars and canvas, and at last, when Ahab was sliding by the vessel, so near as plainly to distinguish Starbuck's face as he leaned over the rail, he hailed him to turn the vessel about and follow him, not too swiftly, at a judicious interval. Glancing upward, he saw Tashtego, Queequeg, and Dagoo eagerly mounting to the three mastheads, while the oarsmen were rocking in the two staved boats which had just been hoisted to the side and were busily at work in repairing them. One after the other, through the portholes, as he sped, he also caught flying glimpses of Stubb and Flask, busying themselves on deck among bundles of new irons and lances. As he saw all this, as he heard the hammers in the broken boats, far other hammers seemed driving a nail into his heart. But he rallied. And now, marking that the vane or flag was gone from the main masthead, he shouted to Tashtego, who had just gained that perch, to descend again for another flag, and a hammer and nails, and so nail it to the mast. Whether fagged by the 3 days' running chase, and the resistance to his swimming in the knotted hamper he bore, or whether it was some latent deceitfulness and malice in him, whichever was true, the white whale's way now began to abate, as it seemed, from the boat so rapidly nearing him once more, though indeed the whale's last start had not been so long a one as before. And still as Ahab glided over the waves, the unpitying sharks accompanied him, and so pertinaciously stuck to the boat, and so continually bit at the plying oars, that the blades became jagged and crunched and left small splinters in the sea at almost every dip.
"Heed them not. Those teeth but give new rollicks to your oars. Pull on. 'Tis the better rest the shark's jaw than the yielding water."
"But at every bite, sir, the thin blades grow smaller and smaller."
"They will last long enough. Pull on."
"But who can tell," he muttered, "whether these sharks swim to feast on the whale or on Ahab.
But pull on, aye, all alive now we near him. The helm, take the helm, let me pass."
And so saying, two of the oarsmen helped him forward to the bows of the still-flying boat. At length, as the craft was cast to one side and ran ranging along with the white whale's flank, He seemed strangely oblivious of its advance, as the whales sometimes will, and Ahab was fairly within the Smoky Mountain mist, which, thrown off from the whale's spout, curled round his great monad nock hump. He was even thus close to him, when, with body arched back and both arms lengthwise high lifted to the poise, he darted his fierce iron and his far fiercer curse into the hated whale. As both steel and curse sank to the socket, as if sucked into a morass, Moby Dick sideways writhed, spasmodically rolled his knife flank against the bow, and without staving a hole in it, so suddenly canted the boat over, that had it not been for the elevated part of the gunwale to which he then clung, Ahab would once more have been tossed into the sea. As it was, three of the oarsmen, who foreknew not the precise instant of the dart, and were therefore unprepared for its effects, these were flung out, but so fell that in an instant two of them clutched the gunwale again, and rising to its level on a combing wave, hurled themselves bodily inboard again, the third man helplessly dropping astern, but still afloat and swimming. Almost simultaneously, with a mighty volition of ungraduated instantaneous swiftness, the white whale darted through the weltering sea. But when Ahab cried out to the steersman to take new turns with the line and hold it so, and commanded the crew to turn round on their seats and tow the boat up to the mark, the moment the treacherous line felt that double strain and tug, it snapped in the empty air. "What breaks in me? Some sinew cracks! 'Tis whole again! Oars, oars! Burst in upon him!" Hearing the tremendous rush of the sea-crashing boat, the whale wheeled round to present his blank forward at bay. But in that evolution, catching sight of the nearing black hull of the ship, seemingly seeing in it the source of all his persecutions, bethinking it may be, a larger and nobler foe, of a sudden he bore down upon its advancing prow, smiting his jaws amid fiery showers of foam. Ahab staggered, his hands smote his forehead. "I grow blind. Hands stretch out before me that I may yet grope my way. Is it night?"
"The whale! The ship!"
cried the cringing oarsman. "Oars, slope downwards to thy depths. O sea, that ere it be forever too late, Ahab may slide this last time upon his mark. I see the ship, the ship! Dash on, my men. Will ye not save my ship?" But as the oarsmen violently forced their boat through the sledge-hammering seas, the before whale-smitten bow ends of two planks burst through, and in an instant almost, the temporarily disabled boat lay nearly level with the waves, its half-waiting, splashing crew trying hard to stop the gap and bail out the pouring water. Meantime, for that one beholding instant, Tashtego's masthead hammer remained suspended in his hand, and the red flag, half wrapping him as with a plaid, then streamed itself straight out from him as his own forward-flowing heart, while Starbuck and Stubb, standing upon the bowsprit beneath, caught sight of the down-coming monster just as soon as he.